This is indeed time for K-State In Focus. We are joined today by Tim Fitzgerald, publisher of Go PowerCat, GoPowerCat.com. Fitz, how you doing, my man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great and excited and ready to go. Well, I don't know. Are we excited? Let me ask you that right off the bat. If you're a K-State fan, are you excited and ready to go into Lawrence tonight?
You know, no, but I mean, you stop and think about it. You literally have nothing to lose.
True.
Everything else has gone wrong with this season. Dirty family secret here. My brother's a KU grad.
Oh, wow.
And he texted me. He goes, is this going to be the worst KU K-State game ever? And I'm like, no, I have a feeling KU will get very healthy by playing K-State. But you never know. I mean, that's what makes this series kind of fun, is once in a while, wild things happen.
Well, we saw a lot of wild things happen last year in Lawrence, of course, if we remember, and we definitely don't want that to happen again, although that would make things maybe a little bit more entertaining. Some people actually ate that stuff up. You know, look at these two programs right now. Obviously, both are struggling, but struggling in different ways. Like right now, K-State would love to be struggling at 11-6 overall, 5-4 in the Big 12. KU hasn't been in any kind of situation like K-State's in right now for I don't know when. So let's take a look at these teams one at a time here going into this matchup. I mean, you've been following, of course, K-State. You have to. That's part of your job. But also, there's always an eye down the road at KU, whether it's football, basketball, whatever the sports may be. I would guess that K-State fans have had at least, even though the season hasn't been good, there's at least a little bit of pleasure knowing that KU's not going to win the Big 12 and that KU has lost four of their last five.
Well, they're just not quite at the level they have been. And yet they're still a really talented team. This, for me, this is one of those rare occasions when I'm watching Bill Self struggle to reach a team, because I've seen him with the ability to reinvent how his team plays during the course of the season. I thought he pulled it off earlier this year when he told them he wanted them to shoot more threes, and they went out and hit like 4,000 in the game. But that didn't last. They haven't been able to perpetuate any kind of consistent offense. They're not able to defend the same way they usually do. Bill Self defenses are always really good when you got a true rim protector back behind your defense, because then you can take a lot of chances on the perimeter. And if that doesn't work, you've got someone that's going to, you know, stop the ball from getting all the way to the basket. And they don't. David McCormick just isn't that. He's a very good player, but he's not, you know, your typical rim protector big man. So it's just kind of throwing everything out of think right now, and it just goes to show you, no matter how good a coach you are, if your team doesn't shoot the ball well, you don't win as many games as you would like.
It is a weird year, obviously, dealing with COVID-19 and all the testing. We've been through that for a while now in regards to football, but basketball, it's the first time they had to go through that, because when this all popped up, that's right before the NCAA tournament was going to start and they canceled it. When you look at what these teams are going through, the landscape is different. Duke is not in the top 25. Kentucky has a losing record. North Carolina has struggled. And now Kansas is on the verge of being out of the top 25 for the first time in quite some time. And then there are teams like Kansas State that are very young. They didn't have a chance to go overseas like they had planned. And they have struggled here, especially recently, although they had a chance to beat Texas A&M. I guess it's a different struggle in a different way for different programs and where they are right now, correct?
Yeah, I mean, if you had an experienced team with, you know, proven leaders and scorers, you know, like Baylor, you're at a huge advantage in the season in which practice and preparation has been disrupted from the very start of the year through now. And if you're a program like K-State that's literally in a ground-up rebuild and doing so without five-star recruits that are capable of coming in and just kind of freelancing and playing well, you're at a disadvantage too. So it's been fascinating to watch the disruption of basketball as we know it, with, you know, some of these main programs not playing to the level at which we're accustomed. But I think also something that goes into this is the lack of crowds. And I really think that's impacted not just the way the teams play, but the way the officials officiate games. So it's been really almost a fascinating case study, and I don't know if anyone will really dig into it post-pandemic and, you know, try to discuss the ramifications of what the pandemic had for the whole scope of college basketball and college athletics. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out over the next 3-4 years.
Our focus on Kansas State Athletics today brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Tim Fitzgerald, publisher, Go Powercat, GoPowercat.com, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. All right, so let's look at we've talked about this multiple times on our show, Fitz, about, you know, Texas firing their head football coach, Auburn firing their head coach, with everything that you have to deal with COVID-19. We talked to Brian Smoller recently, and he said, you know, a lot of people don't understand all of the hoops that you got to jump through and all the testing that you're going through, and how a lot of teams, there are a few games this year on the football field that K-State probably could have said, we're not going to play, or somehow could have got out of it, but they played extremely shorthanded, and obviously that had a big impact on their season. And so we talked about how maybe we got to cut coaches some slack because of all of that. Having said that, Bruce Weber's team right now is 5-13, 1-8 in the Big 12, and the last few Big 12 games have not been pretty, to say the least. What is Bruce Weber's situation at Kansas State, and where do you think K-State will go moving forward? Do you think he'll be back next year, or is there a chance that if he keeps going down this path where the team doesn't have much success, that really you got nothing to lose but to have somebody else come in and coach the team?
Yeah, it's really a complex situation. You know, always making a decision on whether to move against a coach or not is, you know, it's rarely crystal clear. If you're in a situation where it is very clear to everyone, that's a blessing. But this is a very complicated situation for the athletics director. He had pretty much endorsed the fact that he would be supportive of Bruce Weber doing the second rebuild. And this is a much more dramatic rebuild than the first one. I mean, if you recall, when the big three of Brown, Stokes, and Wade came in, they had some upperclassmen or some older guys that could help lead them a little bit more than what we're seeing from poor Mike McGurl, the lone senior, trying to shoulder all of this. So if you've already endorsed, you know, having the rebuild, then what happens this year doesn't really matter, because COVID has it added in a layer of complexity to preparing a brand new team when, honestly, you can't prepare. So it's a difficult decision for Gene Taylor. I think he'll probably stay the course, and I think because of that, a lot of K-State fans will be upset by that, because these two seasons, last year and this, will be the least productive, the most losses probably, in two seasons in the history of Kansas State basketball. So it's just a really troubling trend right now. This isn't just a rebuild. It is everything has been burnt to the ground, and now we've got to clean up the mess and start over. And, you know, if you're fine with that, you're fine with that. And a lot of K-Staters are growing a little antsy about it. This has just been a frustrating year, whether you're talking about basketball, football, or life itself.
Do you think that the K-State base, whether it be boosters or alums, have become a little bit more indifferent to this whole situation, to where there's even more focus on football? Like, well, this is what Bruce does, you know, up and down, up and down. I mean, I know there are people out here that, you know, no matter what Bruce Weber did, as soon as he's hired, they didn't want him hired. They never were on board. There are those types of fans. There are other fans that I think are like, well, we're along this roller coaster ride. I don't love it, but I can maybe deal with it. But the more that I talk to some K-Staters around here, it's just becoming almost like, well, it is what it is type of thing.
Yeah, it's entering that phase now that I find very concerning, which is indifference.
Yep.
And that's far worse than being angry if you're a college football administrator or college sports administrator, because indifference comes with, well, I'm not going to donate. I mean, you've made your decisions. It's really a tough, multi-layered position for Gene Taylor. He's got to figure out how all the math works in this, and, you know, does the buyout equal out, you know, the amount of donations you will get or lose by making your decision? So it's just, it's not easy, but I do warn people that indifference is someplace you don't want to end up. We saw it with K-State football for, you know, 40 years, and we're seeing it now with KU football, where people just excuse it and kind of become spectators at the car wreck. You know, they just want to drive by and look at it, even though it's your car that's in the wreck. And they just kind of become watchers of the whole situation, and that's bad.
Yeah, I agree with you there. If Bruce Weber is back next year, how do you go about selling this program and selling it to the fans? I mean, next year, hopefully, we'll be able to have a full house of fans, or at least allow a full house of fans. But Bruce Weber coming back next year, and this team continues to struggle, obviously, there's still going to be a lot of empty seats at Bramlage, I would imagine.
A lot. They're not selling their allotment of 1,500 tickets this year. I mean, people just aren't showing up, and, you know, there's more reasons than just basketball for that, certainly. But the crowds have been very sparse, and it's disturbing to watch. Now, when we get to post-pandemic, there'll be a lot of K-Staters who really aren't supportive of the direction of the program, who will keep their season tickets just because they hope a move's made and they don't want to give up their seats. And again, that's easy for an athletics director to misread those keeping of the tickets in support of the program or the direction of his coach. So it's going to be difficult to, you know, really see where this is going in terms of fan support, because K-Staters show up. K-Staters do kind of keep going, even though it's difficult to watch. And I just don't see them being dramatically better next year. And I say that even though I have full faith in this young group of players, I think there's a lot of talent here that can be built upon. But when you're this historically bad, when you're on track to go 1-17, you know, maybe 2-16 if they get Iowa State back on the schedule, get that game rescheduled, going 5-13 can feel like a dramatic improvement, and really that's still not acceptable if you're a K-State fan.
Tim Fitzgerald, publisher of Go Powercat, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Are there any names that you are hearing at all in regards to if Gene Taylor in Kansas State decides to part ways with Bruce Weber? Are there any names? You know, in the past we've heard, and of course, Brad Underwood was the one that many people talked about there for a while. But what about now in the environment that we are in? If there were serious talks about not bringing back Bruce Weber, Gene Taylor said the other day it's our intention him to be the head coach. Are there any names that you're hearing that could be good candidates or even it would be possible replacements for Bruce Weber?
Well, we always kind of keep a hot board, you know, in our back pocket, because you just never know. And I think as we've evaluated the situation, you know, when you make a hot board, it's not just about cool coaches that you'd like to come in. Sure, there's a degree of that. But you kind of have to go through the history of the AD, how he hires. And we seem to think that there's an indication Gene Taylor likes guys that or coaches with whom he's had a history. You know, that was the end decision-making segment of the Chris Kleiman hire was, hey, I know this guy, I trust this guy. And that makes us think Craig Smith out at Utah State might be someone, and it might be, you know, a year or two down the line, but it's a coach that's having great success. He was a assistant coach at North Dakota State when Gene was there. Mm-hmm. He's kind of moved up through the ranks. He's had success wherever he's been a head coach. He's a high-energy guy. He just kind of fits the mold of the guy that you think Gene Taylor might hire. But again, as we sit here today, I don't think Gene Taylor's going to make a move to hire a new coach because, you know, you've got the buyout, you've got all the expenses that go with bringing in a new coaching staff in the middle of a pandemic when your revenues are down. And again, that's another added layer to this calculation that he must make.
Yeah, like you said, it's never as simple as it may seem from the front when you get into it and delve into it. Let's shift to the football program for a moment before we get to our off-the-wall question. Chris Kleiman and his team, I mean, there's frustration as there is with a lot of football programs this year with all the testing. It's just a whole different animal. We remember Nebraska was vouching, let's play, let's play, let's play, threaten to sue. And then people kind of followed their line there in the Big Ten. And then Nebraska went through the season they went through. And the reason I bring that up is I know it's different in regards to K-State and the Big 12 and the Big Ten and Nebraska because they started seasons at different times. But the point being is that you really didn't know what you were getting yourself into. Nobody could have known. The coaches didn't know. The ADs didn't know. You didn't know. I didn't know. Nobody knew how tough this would be on the young adults and kids and have to be kind of in their own little bubble, per se. And then, of course, we've got lots of kids now in transfer portals and everything else. I wonder sometimes if, and I don't think they'd ever say it on the record, but off the record, if some of these coaches would be like, was it really worth it? You know, was it really worth it to go through all those challenges just to get through a season when you were short a whole bunch of position group players or you barely had enough guys to practice? What is your take and what did you hear during the football season and some of the frustrations and challenges that the team had to face this year, week in and week out?
Yeah, I think we probably don't fully grasp the mental damage that it, you know, inflicted on some of these kids. You know, let's set aside sports. I can't imagine going through your college experience without a social life, with being pinned up. And I'm not talking about a social life, even going to Aggieville and hanging out, which unfortunately some kids have done anyhow, but not even going to campus for classes. I mean, you're literally sitting in a room. You could be back home. A lot of them have opted to be in Manhattan. But for me, being a journalism guy, the social aspect of college was almost nearly as important, if not more important, than the actual academic part of it. And you learn a lot of skills that are going by the wayside. Now, add in the fact that you've got to prepare for football and you got to do all those things and make those sacrifices it takes to be a football player, which are significant. And you kind of end up being a prisoner of your sport. Everything you do is dictated around, I'm a football player, I can't do this because I might be exposed. So it was a brutal season, and Chris Klieman kind of paid the price for his stance that you mentioned what Brian Smoller had said about they had a couple games that they could have opted out of. He wanted to play. He wanted his guys, whether they were veterans or newcomers, to get the experience of playing college football because he felt like every bit of experience you could absorb from this season, if you're the fourth stringer and you got pushed into significant playing time, it's going to make you a better player. It's going to increase your expectations of yourself for next year that you might think, well, I played, I could be called upon again, I better do a better job preparing myself so I don't have some of the problems I did this year. K-State's schedule turned to be a little bit more difficult in the second half of the season, just as their COVID issues kind of started to kick in. And some guys just couldn't take the stress of everything going on and off the field and decided to hit the portal. We'll look back at this time, I'm confident of this, and a lot of people, a lot of these players, when they're 40 years old, are going to realize the transfer portal seemed like my gateway to a better life, a better football career, and it turned out to ruin everything. A lot of these guys that are in the portal, they're not going to find another scholarship. There's always a new class coming along that's going to fill up scholarships, and now we have the reality that because nobody's exhausting eligibility this season, that there's going to be a pileup of scholarships and fewer opportunities coming along. The portal is a doorway into the unknown, and a lot of guys are going to find out that they're not going to play at the Power 5 level again. They may not play at the FBS level again, and scholarships are going to be so difficult that even though they might be a worthy player, they're simply not going to get a free college education because they squandered the opportunity and they went into the portal. So it's going to be a very, very fascinating time when they self-reflect on looking back over the course of history, what happened in their life once they went to the transfer portal.
Fantastic point. Tip Fitzgerald, publisher Go Power Cat, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. All right, quick question before the off the wall, and that is, KU is an 18-point favorite back to the hardwood tonight in Lawrence. KU cover 18 points against K-State this year's version in Lawrence? God. I mean, KU has been really struggling offensively the last couple of games, but K-State's been having problems with a lot of turnovers, too.
You know, I vowed on my TV show, The Drive, that I was going to stop picking K-State because I'm literally like, I'm so far below 500 by thinking, yes, of course they'll cover 18 points, and then they lose by 25. I'm going to say KU covers that. Isn't that horrible? It's just, even though with KU struggles, you know, I think it's kind of like the wealthy complaining that their taxes went up.
Yeah.
And here's K-State over here living in a cardboard box right now.
Right.
So I think KU's still a much better team. And that's really the bottom line of K-State is it's not competitive in the Big 12. It can play with Iowa State because I don't understand what's happened to Iowa State.
Me neither.
But even if you look at TCU, which might be the eighth best team in the conference, that's a pretty good team.
Yeah.
That, you know, almost won its SEC Challenge game at Missouri and you know, clearly is better than K-State. So K-State's just so far behind the rest of the conference. And also, you know, we talk about KU's problems. Maybe this reality has come to set in. The Big 12 simply better than Kansas this year.
Yeah.
Because that upper portion of the Big 12 is incredible. Baylor's maybe the best Big 12 team I've ever seen, which says so much when you consider some of those KU teams. Then you got layer in Texas. Texas Tech you don't want to mess with. Oklahoma is surprising. And teams like West Virginia and Kansas that are still pretty good teams don't look very good, and their confidence has been dented this season. I think KU will get back a lot of confidence tonight now in Fieldhouse.
Yeah, you could very well be right. All right, time for the off-the-wall question. And I bring this up based on something my wife did here recently. My wife, she was with a friend or two of hers because her friend was turning 40. And so they just got together, a few of them, and they stayed up till like 3 o'clock. I mean, in the morning, talking, whatever else. Okay. And so then the next day, my wife's back at home and she says, oh, I'm just so tired. And I said, well, how late did you stay up? Because, well, we were talking till 3 a.m. And she was talking about how she needed a nap or she needed to go to bed early. And then guess what? She did. We got the boys to bed and it was about 9 or 9:30. She said, I'm going to bed. And I said, oh, you're officially old, honey. You can't handle staying up till 3 a.m. anymore. And she said, yeah, I can't. She was being honest with me. So the question for you, Fitz, when was the last time you were up till 3 a.m. willingly? I mean, willingly, like having a good time or catching up with friends or just or whatever it might be. Or maybe you stayed up watching a movie or whatever it might have been. When was the last time you stayed up till 3 a.m.? And then how did you recover from staying up so late? How long did it take you to recover?
It's been a while. I mean, not that long. I mean, I've been known to mix it up and go kind of late with, you know, maybe a trip to Vegas or something, but certainly pre-pandemic. And the amazing thing is we always talk about if you've been drinking and you have a hangover, mm-hmm. And how you age and you don't handle it well, but she's exactly right. Just staying up late, you don't handle it well anymore. it's like, what has happened to me? I found myself like at 8 o'clock at night. You know, I'll look at my wife and like, I want to go to bed, but I don't want to tell her that because man, that's just pathetic.
It is, isn't
awful.
It?
I know. I ain't what I used to be, but I'm hoping when we get on the other side of this pandemic, I'll be able to go have some fun again. But I don't know. When I visit a place like Key West, uh-huh. or we went to Hawaii. My wife and I went to Hawaii pre-pandemic, and everyone does their stuff during the day, including drinking.
Uh-huh.
They'll do it during the day because you want to enjoy the weather in the day, and I'm thinking, maybe I need to live in a culture where everyone recognizes, hey, let's not stay up at night because the day is so much better.
Right.
And you could... Nobody shuns you for saying, well, I'm going to go to bed at 8 o'clock and be up by 5. You know, it's like,
you want to be accepted is what you're trying to say from that standpoint.
I know. And all of this is a giant confession to the fact that I could have never worked in the ag industry You know, the thought of waking up before dawn to do stuff has never worked with me. But I guess as slowly as, I hate to say this, as 60 begins to approach, I'm a few years away from that, I'm like, boy, this sure is changing into I want to go to bed early and wake up early, which was never me.
Right.
From a child on, I'm like, hey, I want to stay up at night. Oh, my gosh. The pandemic's changed a lot of things. You know, the way you kind of go about things really has altered people in different ways. I'll be curious to see if I slip into my later habits after we get past this, but I don't think I will.
Yeah, I the first sign that I thought I was getting old was I never fell asleep during a sporting event I was watching, no matter how bad the sporting event was. And now my eyes get heavy and I'm just like, the heck with it. I let myself go, and then, you know, my kid wakes me up and I get that little 10-minute power nap, and I wake up like, oh, I missed more of the game than I thought I did, or I didn't miss as much as I thought I did. And so that's kind of a sign that I'm getting a little bit older. But those power naps are very, very enjoyable, I must say.
I got to say this. It there's no shame, people. Come out of the closet if you're in a napper. It's okay to nap. It's okay. We had a running joke when we maintained an office, which is another thing we've given up with the pandemic. There's no reason to have a, you know, pay rent on an office when nobody really can go.
Yeah.
Is that we always joke that GoPowerCat.com was a nap-friendly work environment. You know, I'd have an employee say, man, I'm just so tired, I can't do anything. I'm like, dude, go lay on my couch and take a nap. And I'm thinking, there's no other workplace like this.
No.
You know, because we weren't a traditional 8-to-5 type workplace. We would work late nights covering games and stuff, but like, yeah, there's no shame in napping. And I went through a phase during the early pandemic where I'm like, okay, it's time for my nap. And I just stumble from the home office, cross hall to the bed, and take a 30-minute nap and back at it. And I'm a lot more productive with an app.
That's just a good way to refuel. That's the way I would look at it.
Yep.
And re-energize. All right. So let everybody know how they can read your stuff. I know you do some great job with the podcast and the Insider podcast, and of course at Go Power Cat. So let everybody know about where they can find your stuff, man.
Well, just head over to GoPowerCat.com. We're part of the 24/7 Sports Network. In fact, right now, because of a late signing period is this week, we're having a sale. It ends tomorrow night, 60% off an annual subscription. So if you've been thinking about doing it, it's a great time. We're kind of a multimedia news outlet. We do podcasts, we do videos, we have written content, but not a lot of game story stuff, a lot of analysis and commentary and plenty of recruiting coverage. We were mixed between VIP subscriber coverage and free coverage. So if you don't want to subscribe, you can find a lot of stuff at GoPowerCat you still enjoy, including this podcast. And, you know, if you're a radio listener and you've never really listened to a podcast, go over to GoPowerCat right now, if you're a K-State fan in particular, and click on that Insiders podcast and give it a listen, because this was a particularly really good edition of it. We had a guest on, and it was really a very at one point I was just sitting – as the host, I was listening to the three other panelists talking during this podcast, thinking, this is great stuff, mostly because they were conversing and I didn't have to do a damn thing. And I think that's when I'm at my best with work, when I don't really have to do anything. It was a really good podcast.
For a moment, I dozed off and came back. Oh, hey, not even my turn yet. Yeah, yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, still not.
Yep. Tim, keep up the great work. Enjoy reading your work. And it's amazing where everything has gone from when you first started. And I'm sure you didn't know exactly where everything was going to go. And that's with any great idea. It leads you down some avenues that might be a little bit unexpected. But I know you've done a wonderful job, and appreciate all the efforts and time that you've put into keeping everyone informed about K-State athletics.
Yep, we went from a magazine with a website to a website with a magazine, and now just a website. I don't know where we're headed next, but we'll be there.
Tim, thank you so much. Go get your power nap. We'll talk to you again later, all right?
Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Tim Fitzgerald does a wonderful job covering K-State Athletics, publisher of Go Power Cat, our guest today on the Sports Ticket.